Last week we talked about, in Deuteronomy chapter 8, the folly of forgetting God. The folly of forgetting God. And we didn't quite end the sermon last week. And we talked, and I'm going to pick up there, but we talked about the second main point in this opening series here for the year. We talked about not forgetting God's acts. Doug came up to me after the service and asked, what is the difference between remembering and not forgetting? What is the difference between remembering and not forgetting? You'll notice in verse 2 of this chapter, thou shalt remember. Moses said from the Lord, he said to the people, thou shalt remember. And then we come down to verse number 11. It says, beware that you don't forget. Beware that you forget not. And so it's a legitimate question. Is Moses saying two different things? I think that was what Doug was trying to ask, and a good question. And I think the emphasis in the first sermon that I preached a couple of weeks ago was on remembering what God had done in the past. And the second point last week was, let's not forget what God is doing in the present and what he's about to do. Because that's the emphasis that we saw last week. In verse 7, for the Lord thy God is going to bring you into a good land. You see, God had promised that from way back when, and now he is going to do that. He's going to bring the children of Israel into the promised land. The 40 years of wandering is about done. Moses is not going to lead the people in. Joshua will. Moses is about to commission Joshua. And he's telling all the people that when you get into the land, it's assured, you are going into the land, you can trust me. But when you get there, don't forget me. Don't forget me. So remembering and not forgetting aren't the same thing, but there's two different emphases, if I could say it that way. As we kind of left off in verse number 14, we started talking about the perils of forgetting God last week. And you may not remember, but I have the notes in front of me. We talked about, and I didn't redo the PowerPoint to put them up here, but we talked about the downward spiral that happens when we begin to stop praising God. And the first thing that happens when we get a lot of things in our life, we are provided with everything, like verse 10 says. When you've eaten and you're full, the first thing that we need to do at that point is to thank the Lord. But when we stop doing that, that's the beginning of the downward spiral of forgetting God. It's when we stop thanking God for all that he's given us. And even if you had very little today, but you had Jesus Christ, you should be thankful. And many people around the world that are Christians in other countries have very little, and they have more joy than we do. Because they have Jesus Christ and they are grateful for it. And they're in a lot tougher shape than we are. And so that process of the downward spiral begins when we fail to praise God. The second step is once we start to forget a little bit about God, we start to disobey his commands. Verse 11, beware that you forget not the Lord your God and not keeping his commandments, his judgments, and his statutes, which I command thee this today. If we stop praising God, we're going to start not obeying him. You see, you open up the door by not praising him. The door begins to get way ajar when we stop obeying him. And that theme is going to come up in this sermon as well. The third step and the third downward spiral is in this process of downward progression is that we lift ourselves up in pride. You see, something's got to fill the vacuum. If you're not praising God, if you're not obeying God, you're probably going to lift yourself up. You're going to take the place of God. And that's actually going to lead us to the fourth step, and then ultimately the fifth step that we're going to look at today. Let's begin here in verse 14, and that's where we ended last week. We won't go back through the point about pride. And by the way, I mentioned the word perils last week. I gave you some perils. If we forget God, there's perils. And one of the perils that we talked about was pride. Again, I said last week, I don't care for people that lift themselves up to pride around me. And most of you, if not all of you, don't care for it either. We don't like that. But yet we struggle with it sometimes, and we do it to other people. But there's actually great danger, because pride will take us places we had no intention of going. Pride will take us, will destroy our lives from the inside out. Pride ruins not only your life, but it ruins other lives. It negatively impacts the people we interact with when we lift ourselves up in pride. So let me ask you a question. What does it mean to forget God? What does it mean to forget God? It means to skip crediting and ignore his work in our lives. Forgetting God means to skip giving him credit. It means to say, I'm not going to credit God. It means to ignore his work in our lives. If you are not crediting God, not praising him, and you have begun the process of ignoring him, you are on this path. Notice what he says in verse 14, your heart will be lifted up. You will forget the Lord thy God. That's a repeat. He just said that in verse 11 about forgetting, which brought thee out of the land of Egypt. And then he's going to go through all the things that God had done for them in the past, who led them through the great and terrible wilderness, where there were fiery serpents and scorpions and drought. There was no water. And he brought thee forth water out of the rock. There was nothing in the desert. It was barren. It was dry. There was deadly creatures. There was drought. That's three D's, dry, deadly creatures, and drought. There you go. A nice alliterated outline that you could have for this. That was the desert. There's the fourth D. That was the wilderness. That's where the children of Israel had been brought. They had left Egypt and all of the struggles of Egypt. There were good things in Egypt. There were lots of food. There was plenty of water. So why bring them out? Well, we saw that in verse 3, he brought them out to humble them, to test them. Verse 2 says to prove them, to know what really was in their heart. And now verse 16, he fed them in the wilderness with manna, which thy fathers had never heard of, that he might humble them, that he might test them or prove them to do thee good at the latter end. God was going to show that he was God. That's what he was going to do in the desert. And that's what he had done for the children of Israel. And now he's saying, I am now going to take you from the desert lands, the lands where there was nothing. There wasn't much for food. There wasn't much for water. There was deadly scorpions and serpents. And now I'm going to take you into a new land, a new land that's going to have everything. It's going to be a land flowing with milk and honey. It's going to be a land of wheats and barley and vines, verse 8, and fig trees and pomegranates and olive oil and honey. And brass and iron and all of that. And by the way, if you go to Israel today, they have a lot of stuff. I've read articles about the amazing advancements in technology and science and things that the Jewish people have done from inside this little country. I've gotten a magazine, Israel My Glory, and every time I get a monthly magazine, although my subscription has run out and I haven't renewed it, it's on my desk. But every time I would get one of those magazines, they have a section about the modern improvements that the Jews are doing in Israel today. And it is amazing. Well, I don't remember off the top of my head some of them, but they were blowing my mind type of inventions and things that they were doing, advancements in technology, and computer, and health, the things that they are doing. And here is little old Israel. On every side is hemmed in. The land is still producing. It's amazing that when certain areas that they have retaken back over, where the Arabs couldn't get the land to produce, they've been able to get the land to produce. And on and on and on. And it's still a dry area. But they have, it's amazing what this piece of land has. And of course, they're not in the full land as we know that they're going to have in the future. The danger is they would forget the provision of manna in the wilderness. They would forget the lessons of humility and testing that God was teaching him. They would forget that God's hand was upon them each step of the way. And when they got into the land, they would lift themselves up thinking they had done it all. And the person who would forget about God's provision of water and manna in the desert would be inclined to credit his own abilities, his own power, his own strength for his wealth. When in reality, the wealth that had been given to them was as much as a gift from God as the water that had been given in the desert. The wealth that they would now get in this new land was just as much as a gift as that water that had been given in the desert. So we have water that was provided by God. We have wealth that will be provided by God as we're looking at it from this passage. We know that's what would happen as we read the Bible. And the provision of manna was a test to see if Israel would depend on the word of the Lord. So you have water provided by God. You have wealth provided by God. And it was a test to see if they would believe the third W, his word. And remember what he said earlier in verse 3? He said, man did not live by bread only, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of the Lord. That's how man lives. And again, we talked about that's just like America. In just a few hundred short years, we have forgotten God. We have left him behind. And we have bountifully been blessed. But we have been lifted up in pride thinking we are responsible for all the blessings. Let me tell you today, when you go to work, when you and I put our hands to work, yes, we are doing the work, physically, humanly speaking. But if we take the credit, we are going to begin this downward spiral. Have we been blessed? Yes. Verse 17. Moses goes on to say, obviously from the Lord, and thou shalt say in thine heart, my power and the might of my hand have gotten me this wealth. You're going to go into the land. You're going to have all these things. It's going to be God who has provided him, but you're going to say, it's actually been me. It's my hands that have done all the work. Now, will their hands have done the work? Yes. Is it the Jewish minds that have come up with these inventions? Yes. Ryan got a robot for Christmas. He has trained the robot to know our names. And when the robot has, which has a little camera on the front of it, sees my face, it says, Randy, or something like that.
Randy.
Yeah, Randy, like that. Maybe more of a girl voice than a boy, deep voice. And when Cosmo sees the dog, Luna. I mean, because he's trained it. He put the robot, and it's got instructions. It's hooked to the iPad. It's something that he can do. And it says, put the person's face in front of Cosmo. And the camera's looking, and you got to stand there like this. And it somehow memorizes your face. And he's got games he can play, and he tries to beat the robot. Sometimes he can, sometimes he can't. But I'm pretty certain that robot is pretty smart. But ultimately, it's only as smart as the operator. I'm pretty sure you're all smart. Some of you are smarter in a different way than I am. If I went to Chris's work this week and tried to do Chris's job as head of maintenance at the refinery, I'd probably be fired tomorrow. Because my limited abilities in maintenance is just that, limited. I'm still trying to get a towel rack up in my bathroom. But when Chris goes to work tomorrow, he's going to be able to handle some big jobs for that whole refinery. And ultimately, you know who's given him the ability? It's the Creator. It's the Creator. And I'm not trying to put Ryan on the level of the Creator, but it's Ryan compared to the robot. Now, we're not all robots. So my illustration breaks down. I understand that. And you obviously can see that. But the point is that there's a Creator. There's a designer that has given us the ability. That's the same here. So yes, we can't sit on the couch and be couch potatoes. But we must do the work. But it is God who's given us the ability. Jonathan was at my house the other day, and I asked him, what does he do at Intalco? And he explained some things that went right over my head. Now, I understood some of it, and he used the words carbon, and he has to change these things out on the pot lines all the time because they wear down. But if I went to try to do his job tomorrow, I would fail. And he told me that it's hard. It takes a while to get used to doing that job. It takes several, some people don't make it. But who has given him the ability to do that? God. That is the picture here. We think we have the abilities, and we do, but it is a creator, it is a designer, it is the Lord God. So that is the reason that we go into the new sermon today. And here it is, the new sermon's title, and we're talking about the theme, trusting in the goodness of God. And the outline, you can just throw that outline up here. It's the outline we've had so far. We've done point one, remember God's past goodness. Number two, forget not God's present acts and what he's about to do in the future. And then there were two subpoints last week. Do not forget the provisions of the land. Do not forget to remain humble. Today's sermon is titled, Choosing to Trust in God and His Goodness. Choosing to trust God and His goodness. And I am purposely using the word choose. There's a saying that goes like this. Two choices on the shelf, pleasing God or pleasing self. But in reality, there's a struggle with that saying. I was thinking about it this week. Always trying to come up with a catchy illustration to start a sermon. And I often think about these types of cliches and sayings that, you know, I wonder if really they do make sense. And it makes sense. There are two choices, but you know what? The choices are not on a shelf. The choices are right in our life every day. And it kind of sounds like the choices are stuck up here. No, every day we are presented with these two choices. We're either going to choose to please God or we're going to choose to lift ourselves up. So that part of it is accurate. But they're not really put up on a shelf. I'm not sure what the shelf part has to do with it anyway, other than it rhymes with self. But there are two choices. And do you know what? That's exactly all that's here at the end of this chapter. There are two choices in these verses. And that's the third point, the fruits of the Israelites' choices. And it's like the summary of what Moses just said. Here, I'm coming to the end of this part of the talk. It goes on in the next chapter. But I'm gonna just tell you, everyone. I'm gonna tell you, people. Moses speaking here. You have two choices. I'm not gonna beat around the bush. I'm just gonna tell you what they are. And I'm gonna tell you what happens if you don't do what you need to do. And I'm gonna tell you what happens if you do what you should do. First of all, the blessings of the right choice. You want to know what the right choice is? Remembering God. Simple. Remembering God. Verse 18. But thou shalt remember the Lord thy God. Now he has just said, don't forget. Excuse me, he said in verse 2, remember. He said in verse 11, do not forget. He said in verse 14, do not forget. And maybe he said, remember somewhere else. So this is at least the fourth time, but he's summarizing, he's saying, let me just tell you what you should do. Remember. God doesn't hide his will. God does not hide his will from his people. And I've said this so many times from this pulpit. Please, if you're coming to me and asking me what God's will is for your life, I'm going to tell you what God's will is for your life because it's in his word. Now, if you're supposed to go do switch jobs, I can't necessarily tell you about that part of God's will. But when it comes to the logistics of what I understand God's will to be, it is to remember him. There you go. You know this week what God's will is for your life because that hasn't changed. You go into the New Testament. Do you think God wants you now to forget him as New Testament Christians? No, it's to remember him. So when you think, especially young people, what should I do with my life? Well, I don't know specifically where you're going to work or who you're going to marry, but I know this, if you start here remembering the Lord your God, you will be on the right track and it will be a great time to be following God because you're doing what you're supposed to do. So the first thing in his will is to remember him. Easy. I should just end my sermon right here. That's the end, but there's more. God's word makes it clear what he desires and the blessings that accompany that response. The verse rings with our theme. Look at this. Remember the Lord your God, and he says, why? For it is he that giveth thee the power to get wealth, that he may establish his covenant, which he sware unto the fathers as it is this day. Now let me ask you, what is our theme? Trusting in the goodness of God. Is there anything about the goodness of God in this verse? Absolutely. This verse is filled with the goodness of God. If you remember God, here's what he's going to do. He's going to give you the power. He's going to give you the wealth. He's going to continue to establish his covenant. This is all about who he is. If you follow him, you will be blessed. Psalm chapter 1, let me read it for you in case you can't remember it, but most of you haven't memorized. Psalm chapter 1 says the exact same thing. Psalm 1 is a great psalm because it starts the greatest psalm or hymn book that the world's ever known. And so Psalm 1 must be important if it's the beginning of the great hymn book, the book of Psalms. Blessed is the man that does not walk in the counsel of the ungodly, nor standeth in the way of sinners, nor sitteth in the seat of the scornful. But his delight is in the law of the Lord, and in his law doth he meditate day and night. And he will be like a tree planted by the rivers of water. It brings forth his fruit in a season, his leaf will not wither, and whatsoever he doeth will prosper. If you follow God, if you remember God, if you acknowledge God, he will bless you. Oh, you say, good. That means at the end of the day, I get my Corvette that I've always wanted. Or I get whatever it is that I've always wanted. Mm-hmm. I could use an upgrade in my weather station. The one that went to 140 degrees a few weeks ago. There's something not quite right there. And I have my eye on a Davis weather station, which means absolutely nothing to you, but it's the cream of the crop.
You can get an outdoor thermometer for 5 minutes.
And my weather station in any ice storms does not accurately read the northeast wind. Somebody asked me a couple of years ago when we were in the middle of one of our ice storms. It's one of the guys from Perry Pallet. He uses my weather station, and he checked it in the middle of the ice storm, and he wanted to know why there were northeast wind in Ferndale, but there wasn't any at my house. And so I went outside, and I took a picture of my weather station, and I showed him that it was encased in a quarter-inch thick ice, including the anemometer. I need a weather station that will not freeze up in an ice storm. But you know what? Just because I follow God does not mean that I will be blessed with that kind of weather station or a Corvette or whatever I dream of. Something more important here. You know what the blessings of God are for our lives that are more important than Davis weather stations and Corvettes or whatever you want? You know what it is? It's that he's going to keep his covenant. It's that he's going to keep his promises. It's that he's going to keep his word. It's that he is the one that is the creator and the author and the sustainer and the finisher. And it's all about him. That's the blessings. His goodness, his love, his mercy. All of that. And I'm summarizing all of those blessings as his goodness. You know what? This year, you will be touched by the goodness of God. And you will recognize the goodness of God in 2019 if you follow him, if you remember him. But I'll tell you what, you're going to struggle to be touched by the goodness of God. Not that he won't be merciful, he still will be. Not that he won't still love you, he still will love you. But if you struggle, and if we disobey, and we refuse to follow him, that goodness of God will be limited. That goodness of God will not affect you and touch you like it would if you had obeyed and followed him. And let's look at the history of the children of Israel. Let's take a look at what happened to them. The Old Testament is full of illustrations of when the children of Israel did not remember the Lord their God. I read a passage in Hosea this morning in Sunday school. And in that book of Hosea, we find that Hosea is marrying someone either who was a prostitute or who would become one. And it was a picture of Israel and their unfaithfulness towards God. And they would have three children, and all three names are negative. But two of the names are talking about the lack of mercy and the lack that God would be their God. He's talking about his people in Hosea. You see, they had forgotten God, or they had mixed God with other gods, and they missed out on a lot of the goodness of God. Listen, it's safest to stay in the remembrance of the Lord your God through this year. So the people must remember God. Doesn't mean to simply put your name, go back to this verse 18. Just when we remember the name of the Lord our God, it doesn't simply mean you just put it in your memory bank. I'm going to remember God today. Okay, I remembered him today. Now I'm on doing whatever I want to do. What does it mean to remember God? That's what we want to think about here. The idea is clear. It is to recall information or events with a focus on responding in an appropriate manner. It is a recalling, it is a remembering, but a specific focusing and responding in an appropriate manner. There's a word we like to talk about, glorifying God. Glorifying God, I mentioned it a few weeks ago, is a responding to God. It's recalling what he has done, it's responding, and then it's reflecting him. That's three R's, three-point outline, but that is a perfect description of the glory of God, or glorifying God. It is recalling, it is then responding, it is then reflecting. And it is reflecting God to the people around us. Listen, when we don't remember God, when we forget him, how do you think we're going to reflect him to other people? How do you think we're going to, you think we're going to tell people about what God's done in our lives and we're not remembering what he's done in our lives? Of course not. You know what happens? We become self-sufficient. When we forget God, we take the credit. We think we've produced the results and we forget about him. Moses is reminding the people that God is the one who has given us the power to these people to receive his wealth. And so the bottom line is this. We can avoid pride by humbly and constantly remembering the Lord and the lessons that he has taught us. We can avoid pride by humbly and constantly remembering the Lord and the lessons that he has taught us. The thing that we can do when it comes to humility is give God the credit. That'll keep us humble. Number two, not only that, we can constantly remind ourselves of what God has done by using the tools that he has given us, like prayer journals and Bible study and conversations with godly people. Write down the things that God has done. Make a journal. Make a Thanksgiving journal. Do I have a job tomorrow? We have one over here that doesn't. But we are praying that God will provide. We don't know when that's going to be. But for most of us, we have a job. We write that down. By the way, can Lene still be grateful about God's goodness in the midst of that? Absolutely. Absolutely. And she teaches the next generation as we do. And it is in the hardships that we're probably going to learn more and teach more to our children. But we write down that God has given us our work. God has given us the ability to do function. God has given us all of these things. Write them down. Write what God's done for you. Write about what Jesus has done for you. Make a journal. Write the verses. Write Psalm 46. Write Psalm 23. Write them into your journals. And this will help us remember that all life is a gift from God and there is nothing that exists apart from his loving hand. So the blessing is this, that God's hand will remain upon you. We come into a dangerous place when we forget God because we set ourselves up for God's hand to be removed off your life. There is no more dangerous place to be in life than to have God's hand removed off of you. I'll tell you what, those who forget God, who call themselves Christians, his people who start to forget God do not feel very safe. Because God's presence goes from being a comforting place to a very convicting place. Let's remember God. But number two, the second choice is the bane of the wrong choice. The bane of the wrong choice. There's a blessing of the right choice. It is that the goodness of God will cover us. It will carry us. But there is the wrong choice, and it's obvious in this chapter with the wrong choice. If the right choice is remembering God, what's the wrong choice? Forgetting God. Look at verse 19. And it shall be, if thou do it all, forget the Lord thy God, and walk after other gods, and serve them, and worship them. I testify against you this day that you will surely perish. Here's the second thing quickly here. Moses says this is the fourth step in the downward progression of forgetting God. If you forget God, what are you going to do? If you forget God, what are you going to do? What does Moses say you're going to end up doing? It's clear. You could even turn your Bibles upside down, sideways. It's still going to read the same. It says, you will walk after other gods. The fourth step in the downward progression is you will follow other gods. You're telling me, Pastor Randy, that if I have begun the process of forgetting God, I'm a Christian, that I am going to start worshiping other gods. I don't have any idols in my house. Yesterday, I took Abby to On Rice for a date in Bellingham. On Rice there on Barkley. And in there, they have some interesting, it was fun. Abby was just looking at all the stuff that's on the walls. So here come the questions. But up above, there were some interesting looking carvings. And she's like, what are those? And I'm like, I think they're false idols from Buddhas or something. I wasn't sure what they were, to be honest. But I was just saying, you know, we talked a little bit about that. Because I honestly didn't know what they were. They were carvings. But you don't have any of those. At least I hope you don't have any of those at your house. We don't worship those kind of idols, I hope. Now, the children of Israel did. They did have some of those types of things that they struggled with. The fourth step, we don't praise God. We stop praising God. We start not following his commandments. The third step, we lift ourselves in pride. And at that point, we have to fill the vacuum. And we fill the vacuum with something else. And it's usually in America, it's our wealth or it's ourselves. If you have done that, if you have served them, if you are worshiping them, it says here, Moses says, God's going to speak against you. Look, he says, I testify against you. What does it mean to walk after other gods? In Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 4, we find Moses imploring the Israelites to hear and understand that there was only one God. Hear, O Israel, the Lord thy God is one. In chapter 7, we find Moses explaining. So these are just the right up to this, to chapter 8. We find in chapter 7, here's all the peoples that you're going to conquer. The Hittites and the Girgashites and all the Perizzites or whatever they were. And all the Ites. And then in verse 1, and then it's talking about the Lord's going to destroy them. Do not make a covenant. Don't marry them. Why, verse 4, chapter 7, they will turn thy son from following me. They will, that you will serve other gods, so the anger of the Lord will be kindled against you and destroy thee suddenly. But you shall deal with them. You shall destroy their altars. You shall break down their images. You shall cut down their groves. You shall burn their images with fire. Why? Verse 6. Why? Okay, are you following? Deuteronomy 7, verse 6. Why? Because you are a holy people. And the Lord thy God, unto the Lord thy God hath chosen to be a special people unto himself above all people that are upon the face of the earth. Because the Lord did not set his love upon you nor choose you because you were more in number than them, for you were the fewest. But because the Lord loved you and because he would keep the oath which he had sworn unto your fathers, hath the Lord brought you out with a mighty hand and redeemed you out of the house of the bondman. Know therefore that the Lord thy God, he is God. He is faithful. He keeps his covenant and mercy. This sounds like the goodness of God with them that love him and keeps his commandments to 1,000 generations. So what does it mean to walk after other gods? It means to follow all these other forms of worship that are opposing God because there's only one true God. But let me ask you today, let's bring it down here today because you don't have any idols in your house. And if you do, I would like to come break them down. But I don't think you do. Why doesn't God want us to serve other gods? Have you ever thought of that? Why is it that God doesn't want us to serve other gods? I have a few reasons up here. And you're going to have to write fast because time is done here. First of all, and I just read you a few reasons. Number one, he is the one and only true God. And you'll see words that all start with F up here in each of these points. I was trying to make somewhat of an alliterated way to remember these. There's only one true God, which makes every other God, here's the word that starts with F, false. Let me read you a passage in Psalms. Psalm 86. This was our Thanksgiving psalm, but actually it talks about false gods and the true God in Psalm 86. You may remember it from a few weeks back or a few months ago. Psalm 86, verse 8. Among the gods, there is none like unto thee, O Lord. Neither are there any works like unto thy works. All the nations whom thou hast made shall come and worship before thee, O Lord, and shall glorify thy name. Why? Because you are great. You do wondrous things. You are God alone. You are God alone. There's only one true God. Number two, he is not only a true God, he's not the only one. He is the creator of everything. He is preeminent. He is foremost. Therefore, he demands our worship. Let me read you Nehemiah chapter 9, verse 6. Nehemiah chapter 9, verse 6. And this is a chapter that speaks of the goodness of God. Thou, even thou, art Lord alone. Thou hast made heaven, the heaven of heavens, with all their host. Thou hast made the earth and all things that are therein, the seas and all that's therein. Thou preservest them all, and the host of heaven worshipeth thee. Thou art the Lord, the God. Thou art the Lord, the God who didst choose Abram. And then he goes on and talks about the history of Israel and what he's done for them. God is the creator. Thirdly, why should we only serve God alone and not other gods? Because he's the one that's doing the work. False gods are dead. False gods are dumb. They've never said a word. Now, demonic forces might say things, it might cause people to say, but those stone things and wood things are dumb. And they're deaf. And they're dead. And any other D word you want to put in there. Psalm 115. It's not hard to find verses that say this. Psalm 115, verse 3. And we're not even going to read verses 1 and 2, which are really key to this. But our God is in the heavens. He had done whatever he pleased. Their idols are silver and gold, the work of men's hands. They have mouths, but they don't speak. They have eyes, but they don't see. They have ears, but they don't hear. They have noses, but they don't sniff or smell. They have hands, but they don't handle or touch. They have feet, but they can't walk. They don't speak because they don't have a throat. They that make them are like unto them, so is everyone that trusteth in them. Well, that's just enough for me right there. But here's the problem. We think about the Buddhas and the little idols that are on the shelves of everybody else in Middle East or wherever they might be in India and Sri Lanka and all these other places. We're not doing that, so we're okay. Oh, yes, we are when we get out our dollar bills and we worship them and our possessions. And do possessions control people? Yes. There's one more. Well, actually, there's two here. Why should we worship God alone? Why shouldn't we serve other gods? Because our God is kind, loving, and gracious to his creation. And I got verses up there, Psalm 136, 1 through 10, Exodus 20, verse 6. He is our friend. I'll tell you what. I'll show you what is not my friend. It's in my wallet. I don't have much of them in here. After the dates, I'm down to $2. But I'll tell you what, George hasn't spoken to me. And they're pretty dumb. And they're not my friends. The point being is, whatever our idols are, and it may not be the greenbacks, it may not be whatever, you know, whatever I'm mentioning here, it might be something else. It might be power. They're not our friend. Lastly, and we could go on and on. Isaiah 44, 22, God is a God who forgives. You better be glad that your God forgives. So if you missed everything today, just walk out of here praising God that God has forgiven you of your sin. Because you know what? Not one greenback has ever forgiven me. Not one car in my yard of the three that I have has ever forgiven me. Not one weather station has ever forgiven me. Not one idol will ever forgive you, but God will. Amen. He's good. That's why we don't worship other gods. Oh, I found one more. God doesn't like to share glory with false gods. Isaiah 42, verse 8. False gods take the rightful worship from him. He doesn't like that. This presents a fragmented worship. There's our F. And let me give you an example, lest you miss this, fragmented worship. You'll remember that the children of Israel tried this. They tried to mix the true God with the false gods. Elijah in 1 Kings 17 and 18 at Mount Carmel. Remember what he said? I can see it in my Bible, top right. Can't remember the exact verse. But he says, which way are you going to go? Which choice? And actually, the choices were not just God and false gods. It was God and mixed, fragmented worship. They wanted a little bit of God along with all of these other gods. They wanted, and often in the prophets, you'll see, they still tried to do sacrifices. They tried to keep an element of spirituality in their worship as they worship their false gods. God does not like that. He's a jealous God. He does not like fragmented worship. That's why David says in Psalm 86, let me go back there. David says in Psalm 86, thinking of this, he's thinking about God is greater than the false gods. It's God who's doing these things. He says this, teach me thy way, O Lord. I will walk in thy truth. Unite my heart to fear thy name. That is opposite of fragmentation. It's bringing it together. It's single-hearted devotion. God does not like fragmented. He doesn't want a part of us. He wants all of us. And when we forget God and we allow the false worship to come into our lives, here's what a lot of people are doing in their churches. And we may be guilty at times ourselves. We are. We keep God on Sunday and maybe Monday. And then the rest of the week, we kind of mix them with other things. He doesn't like it. That's not what he expects. It's all or nothing. Now we fail. We struggle. I do. If you want the goodness of God to be evident in your life this year, take the first choice. You know what the fifth step in our downward progression is? Did you hear it? Did you hear what the fifth step was? The final last step? Go back right here, Deuteronomy 8, 19, and into 20. That's the last step. Here it is. The fifth step in the downward progression is death. He says, if you forget me, if you don't do this, you're going to lift yourself up in pride, you're going to start worshiping other gods, and I will destroy you. I testify, you will perish. And just like the nations that the Lord is going to destroy before your face, so you will perish. And that happened. And Habakkuk says in his book, he says, God, why in the world would you use a worse nation like Babylon to destroy Judah? Here's Judah, your people. Of course, they haven't been worshiping you, right? He knows that. But he says, God, why would you use Babylon, who's 20 times worse as Judah, to destroy? You know, God doesn't really give a straight answer to that. But I'm going to have you turn to Habakkuk chapter 2. I'll give you a couple of seconds. But he does give an answer that when you look at it, at first may not make sense, but when you think about it, it really does. So turn to Habakkuk chapter 2. We'll do this in closing. And then we'll give Waylon a break. Chapter 2. And you can look chapter 1. Chapter 1 tells us, it tells us the questions and that he has. Chapter 1, verse 12. Look at here. I'll show you this. Chapter 1, verse 12. Art thou not from everlasting, O Lord my God, mine Holy One? We shall not die. O Lord, thou hast ordained them for judgment. O mighty God, thou hast established them for correction. Thou art of pure eyes and to behold evil. Thou cannot look upon iniquity. And then he goes on and he says, he's asking in these verses, why are you going to use a wicked people to punish my nation? That's what he's asking in this section. I don't understand it, God. Here's what they do. And he describes what Babylon did. Verse chapter 2, verse 1, I will stand upon my watch, I will set me upon the tower, I will watch to see what he will say unto me, what shall I answer when I am reproved? Verse 17 is the question. Shall they therefore empty their net and not spare continuously to slay the nations? He's saying, is Babylon going to do all this bad stuff to my nation? The Lord answered me, chapter 2, verse 2. He said, write a vision, make it plain upon the tables, that he may run that readeth it. For the vision is yet for an appointed time, but at the end it will speak. It will not lie, though it tarry. Wait for it, because it will surely come. It will not tarry. Behold, the soul which is lifted up is not upright in him. And here it is. The just shall live by faith, or by his faith. You say, Pastor Andy, this... God's responding here, and all of a sudden he's saying, he's talking about a vision, you're not going to understand it, but you will eventually, and then the just shall live by his faith. What does that got to do with anything? I'll tell you what it has to do. God doesn't have to answer. God doesn't have to tell us all the reasons why, and he didn't tell Habakkuk all the reasons why, but you know what he told Habakkuk? He said, trust me. Trust me, I know what I'm doing. And those who trust me will live by faith. And he goes on to say, he talks in verse 14, for the earth shall be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. You will one day know and understand why all this transpires. You know what? Trusting in the goodness of God in 2019, listen, is going to be a step of faith. If we're going to truly trust in what God has for us this year, it will require us to live by faith. This verse is repeated 3 times in the New Testament, in Galatians, and in Hebrews, and in Romans, and it's all applicable to us. Is it any different for us today? Do the just still need to live by faith? Absolutely. So ultimately, when we look at the conclusion, Deuteronomy 8 is about faith. It's about reliance. It's about trusting in God. When we forget God, we behave like we do not trust his plan, his work, and his name. We do not trust in his goodness. But I encourage you to be like the psalmist. And I close with this passage, Psalm 118. I encourage you in 2019 to live like this psalmist, who in the midst of difficulty, no doubt, in the midst of things seemingly crumbling around him, he said in verse 1, O give thanks unto the Lord, for he is good, because his mercy endureth forever. Let Israel now say that his mercy endureth forever. Let the house of Aaron say, his mercy endureth forever. Let them that fear the Lord say, his mercy endureth forever. I called upon the Lord in distress. The Lord answered me and set me in a large place. The Lord is on my side. I will not fear what man can do to me. The Lord taketh my part with them that help me. Therefore I shall see my desire upon them that hate me. It is better to trust in the Lord than to put confidence in man. It is better to trust in the Lord than to put confidence in princes. And it is better to trust in the Lord than to trust in yourself. Trust his good plan. Trust his goodness in 2019. Rise up and become a faith follower. And this year, may it be the best year of spiritual growth in your life, even as difficulties may come. May you find that God is enough.